Time to fuck shit up.
Hey Zed Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And this is the Walking Dead cast episode 489.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead season 11, episode 22, Faith.
It's time to fuck shit up.
I was going to ask Jason, you, me, shit tunnel?
That's so hilarious. I was like, is that the right captioning? Did somebody, some smart ass put that in there?
Do you think Connie thinks Daryl's, a bit, not all there?
It's God, that's kind of crude, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a sweet talker. I want to mention that Lucy was on the BBC fucking shit up the other day.
I was on the BBC fucking shit up the other day.
That's pretty cool. You were talking about 16th century Scottish theological figure John Knox.
I was, and I didn't swear once, and I was really proud of myself.
Were you worried that you might slip into it?
Yes. Yeah. I have had to accept the fact that I swear quite a lot. But no, it was super fun, and you can find it on BBC Sounds or iPlayer.
It was fun to listen to. I'll put a link in the show notes too if people want to listen. Oh,
thanks.
It's really cool.
Yeah, no, it was fun.
I also want to mention, I mean, I think probably people have been wondering if Karen would put in an appearance before the show's over. And no, she will not. Okay, next. No, I'm just kidding. Karen will, actually, because she's going to be at the live podcast that we do right after the finale. And it'll be me and you, Lucy, and Karen and Chris from the Talking Dead podcast up there. So
Yay. We'll
get to hear her one more time before it's all through. I don't think she's caught up on the show.
I was going to say, has she caught up? Because I actually am quite entertained. I'm really entertained to hear a hot take on the finale from someone who has not that much of a clue what has happened. So yeah. I'm actually really here for that. I think that would be fun.
I don't think she's seen any of season 11, and she dropped off pretty early in season 10, as far as I know. Maybe she'll surprise us and just know everything.
Maybe.
All right, let's get into this week's episode, Walking Dead season 11, episode 22, Faith. What'd you think?
Dun, 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 dun. George Michael. I liked it. Yes, I enjoyed it. Luke's back. My boyfriend's back. So I'm really happy.
Yay.
Hey, Luke is back. Clearly someone looked at it and thought they wouldn't be able to hold my attention for more than one episode after Lance's death unless they brought Luke back. So didn't think that would happen. Pretty genuinely quick. Was like, guess we're never seeing that dude again. But yeah, that was nice.
I'm so glad. It would have been sad if he just never, like a Heath kind of a thing, you know?
Absolutely. Like at all. Yeah, I suspect that it was to do with whether or not he would be filming another Fantastic Beasts. I think that's why they left the door kind of open. But it was really nice to have him back. And I felt some of the episode was a little slow, but it really picked up at the end. And it was kind of some good scenes. I have some thoughts about some of the things and decisions that happened in this episode. But overall, I liked it.
I liked it, but some of the storytelling I felt like was manipulative more than usual. It felt forced in order to get us to think something was happening when it was really something else. And it really stood out to me. I want to try to ignore this and just enjoy it for the tension and everything. And the acting was good. There was a lot good about it. But It stood out enough that it lowered my estimation of the episode. I mean, I still thought it was pretty good, though.
I think my favorite line was I think General Hux or somebody. I'm calling him General Hux because he looks really like the character that Donald Gleason plays in the Star Wars trilogy. Mm-hmm. It says something to Negan about, like, that pregnant wife of yours. I'm like, we fucking get it. Like, she's pregnant. You don't need to mention it in every sentence. So, yeah, there were a couple of moments where I was like that. Oh, okay. And I definitely wish they hadn't spoiled the
spinoffs,
but I say that every week, so everyone knows.
But
if anyone's
particularly any doubt, this episode, this is why JDM was verbally, you know, publicly disappointed that they spoiled that because of what happened in this episode. Like, it would have been so much more attention filled if we didn't.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. But I'm going to go on the record and say I still would have been like, should have been his end. But anyway, that's just my
opinion, yeah. We'd be like, all right, here it comes, here it comes. Oh, wait, why? What are you doing, Ezekiel? Come on.
No, no, Ezekiel, we were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. I know, terrible, terrible.
I was joking on the instant reaction that because Rima was like, he probably went out there more for Annie than Negan. You know, Ezekiel, and if it had just been Negan, maybe he wouldn't have stepped in front of the guns. And so I thought it'd be funny if he just like stepped in front of Annie and be like, okay, go ahead, just get him.
Yeah. Everyone forms that really tight circle just around Annie and Negan's
around
in the
Annie
snow, like,
and aw. Negan's on five.
They're like, go ahead, no one cares.
Yeah. All right. Well, what's your.
Negan's like, oh, okay.
Wait, did I go first last week or did you? Do you remember?
You did.
I did, so it's your turn.
Sure. I want to start with Michael fucking Mercer.
Mm-hmm.
What a man. What a hero.
What a man, what a man.
Oh, what a mighty fine man. man, I'm mighty good. This is a very musical episode. I think my reading of this is that Mercer's been sitting on this for longer than we've realized. I don't think he made a snap decision in this episode. I think things have been moving behind the scenes that we don't know about. I don't think it's been happening for a long time, but I think he didn't make his decision in the courtroom. I think he was coming to it before that anyway.
I don't totally agree with that.
Yeah? Okay, go on. Hit me. What do you think?
I think that he's been beaten down by this system. And that he's also very much invested in his identity as a servant of the people. And the shape that's taken is in this very rigid structure of the military where you need to follow orders and everything like that. And so those two things, like, and also he just thinks, I would do something, but my role is to protect the people, and I think that if I do something, it's only going to get people killed, and it may actually end up worse because Pamela will just crack down, you know. So that's like when Yumiko goes to him and says, you need to testify, and he's like, that's not going to do anything. I just think it's because he really thinks that. He's like, I want to help the most people, but I don't want to hurt people. So he's not, you know, ready to do it.
See, I agree with a lot of what you said, but I don't think that he would be that chill with Princess being taken away. So I think the decision has to have kind of started before that. I don't believe that he
would have
sat back.
That was kind of odd, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of like, no, I feel like he has to have started making plans at that point. Maybe not committing to them, but to me...
Well, I mean, I think... I see what you're saying. I think that he just still thinks there's nothing he can do about that. That if he tries to start a revolution, it will just end up possibly in a lot of people dead, and Princess is still going to be in the same situation.
So you think he'd rather have her alive and in prison than take a risk and try and free her from that?
Yeah, I think I just think that he thinks it's not going to work, you know, that it's
so.
It's,
what do you think changed his mind?
Eugene's speech.
Yeah. See, to me, that was a confirmation speech.
Let's see. Eugene addresses the court and says he'd be dead if it's not for his friends. And he didn't want his fate to discourage them from finding the courage to help others and do what's right. To me, that part of the speech was him knowing he's going to die and trying to inspire his friends, like, to continue on.
Oh, definitely. Being good people without him. Completely.
And that when we did a top five of what we do if we got bitten, that's what one of the things I said I would do. I'd try to give an inspiring speech to my friends to go on without me. But then he starts talking about falling in with the saviors. He knew they did bad things, but, quote, I placed value on order and safety above all other things. That's exactly what Mercer has done.
Yeah, that seemed very pointed, didn't it?
Yeah, and Mercer. I mean, I think he was talking to everybody, but Mercer was listening. The camera went on his face. So placing order and safety above all other things, I think, is what Mercer does. Then he says, but I soon realized that while I wasn't the one swinging the bat, I nevertheless had blood on my hands. I knew what was happening. My inaction made me culpable, and I hated myself for that. So I did something in my own little way. I changed the world, and I learned that one person can do that. That speaks to Mercer feeling like he has no power because he's been beaten down. But Eugene is saying, no, sometimes all it takes is one person to do that. So I think he just touched on a few three key things that have been holding Mercer back, and I think that's what convinced him.
Interesting. Well, I think both arguments are valid, but obviously I'm right.
I would say the same thing. Both arguments are valid, and obviously I'm right.
We should get that on t-shirts. Irrespective of how he got there, I thought the let's time to fuck shit up line was so good. And yeah, I have been kind so of... good. I've been sort of like not always listening to in the post episode chats with Angela Kang, but I listened to this one and apparently that was an ad lib from the guy who plays Mercer. And I'm like,
yeah,
it was a very well pitched ad lib. I enjoyed it. So seeing that final piece of the puzzle kind of fall into place was very, very nice. And I think it kind of culminates the sense that things are that combined with the common troopers laying down their arms at Alexandria really highlights that the gloves are off now. We're doing this. This is full-on rebellion.
Yeah. I mean, another thing with Mercer is there's been a lot of pressure for him to do something for a long time, and he hasn't been doing anything. And so, you know, I think it was good to show him resisting all this time, because you want to have an inciting moment for him, or else I'd wonder, well, why didn't he do something a long time ago? The place has been corrupt forever, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it was already clear that Eugene was going to be killed. So that's why I think this was really it. But that I feel like the whole episode, even though it's focused on Yumiko and Eugene in court, to me, it was about Mercer, because they always show him watching. He happens to be there in the court and just taking it all in. And then Yumiko goes to try to convince him, and he says, if I do what you say, it won't do anything. So I feel like the whole episode is about, I mean, at least this storyline is about watching Mercer be convinced to do this.
And I think it's important in a way. So it's frustrating because it feels sometimes like this season is dragging. But the one thing I would say is,
I agree, yeah,
it's satisfying to see someone struggle with making the right decision. And to have it be someone who we otherwise respect and think is cool, to see someone struggle with, because these things aren't easy all the time.
Right.
And I think sometimes with our group, you know, they don't struggle so much with these decisions anymore because they've got a really clear identity of who they are and who their loyalties lie to. And we happen to like the people who their loyalties lie to, so that makes sense to us in our little moral understanding of the show. But to be so frustrated with Mercer is natural, I think, at this point, but also is all the more rewarding when you see him finally come round to the idea that, yeah, this is what's going to happen. And I think he's going to be their most important asset going forward because of the respect and hold he has in the Commonwealth.
And the respect to the military in particular, a fighting force, you know?
Yes, because that's the thing. When he says that to Eugene, he's surrounded by at least, I don't know, six or eight other guys. that's already, you know, the start of something, which is just really cool and very inspiring and makes me excited for what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and I hope it happens in one episode so we get an epilogue for the finale.
Yeah, no, right, do it quickly.
But I like this whole storyline a lot. The courtroom stuff, how the judge was clearly in Milton's pockets, and her and her crocodile tears. And
oh, she didn't even try and shed one. I was like, Pamela, come on, your face is dry as a bone here. Like, you could do it. You know who could cry on demand? Lance. I bet he'd give a much better performance.
He could, even anyway, over Sebastian, I bet.
Even over Sebastian, he could, like, bring it to the fore, I bet.
I lost my coin in his head.
Yeah. I did have a moment when they took Eugene downstairs where I was like, I really hope they've cleaned up. Like, it's not nice in there.
When she's like, my son's life cannot be in vain, I'm like, his life was in vain.
I'm like, what part of his life wasn't in vain, wasn't Pamela? In vain.
And then watching the, Yumiko seems to think, I'm going to lose this, but she cares more about public opinion because she's trying to inspire an uprising. And I thought they were lucky people were even allowed to watch, really. Given how it ended, where it's like Yumiko goes, Your Honor, the defense rests, and the judge immediately, the Commonwealth finds Eugene Porter guilty of murder in the first degree, sentenced to public execution within 1 hour.
Your Honor, the defense rests. Eugene's guilty.
Like, yeah, kill him now. Damn it. I mean, it feels like The Handmaid's Tale. Right. At this point. Put him, hang him on the wall.
I don't understand why they even waited an hour. I was like, okay.
Yeah,
I
mean, exactly.
You may as well just have shot him there and then.
Mercer time to do something. Yeah, right.
Yeah, just, yeah.
And it kind of, I don't want to be too real world, but the whole thing about how the court is kind of a sham, just, and it reminds me, it feels like the United States is heading in this direction where people have lost faith in our institutions, and so public opinion is much more important now, mm-hmm. and how things will go. It's super scary.
Well, look at, you know, some of the most high profile trials in the last 2 years. It's been judgment by TikTok. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's nuts. It's really, really wild. It's especially weird in Britain, I think, because we don't televise court cases. So that's really, it's kind of, we only get like the weird.
We didn't used to. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, it seems to have changed in recent years. I remember OJ was televised, right?
Yeah, that was. Yeah. That's true. That was quite a while ago. So I don't know. Yeah, how they decide. Maybe when it's a celebrity, they do it. I don't know.
Yeah. We just get the dodgy court cartoonists that do like.
Yeah, that's what we usually get. Maybe, I think it might have something to do with celebrity. If you're already a public figure, then they can do it for some reason, maybe. I don't know.
I always wanted to be a court cartoonist. I'm not very good at drawing. I just thought it would be fun.
Just draw stick figures.
Yeah, it's like draw stick men with sad faces and be like, I think he was guilty. Sad faces.
Okay, well, my first point is, what was Negan doing?
Oh, gosh.
Because
this
is the part I kind of had a problem with, but maybe I'm just confused. So last episode, Ezekiel and Negan seemed to come to a begrudging, agreement to work together despite their differences. And Negan told Ezekiel, you're the one that inspires hope, so you can do that. But they mm-hmm. need something to spark that hope or something. So I'm going to provide that, and I might not make it out. So that, to me, says he's going to do something that will get himself killed. And mm-hmm. here it's pretty clear that he thinks if he's a martyr, that he will provide that spark. And I'm like, is that a great plan? Because if no one likes you, is your death going to spark a rebellion? Is it going to inspire anybody? Or will people just go, oh, glad he's dead, you know?
Like, everyone's like, this just makes us like the Commonwealth more.
Yeah, way to go.
I would be like, yay, sign us up. We'll be troopers.
It's not a good plan. It's not.
No, it's not.
It's like
not.
This might or might not work, and you're just sacrificing your life for it. It's just to make mm-hmm. us think Negan's a hero.
Maybe all anyone talks about is how much they like Glenn. So maybe if I die like Glenn, then people will like me. And it's like, nah, mate, it doesn't work like that.
But I'm also unclear if that, it seemed like that was on his mind because he talked about how he might not make it out last week. But mm-hmm. I don't know for sure if that's exactly what he had in mind this whole time. They're cleaning up the tracks and secretly plotting. And it was cool to see the sign language being used to good effect here, mm-hmm. about two in the perimeter, four inside. Negan's draws this map. Then Negan's asking the soldier if his wife can take a break. Well, he already knows that he's going to get in trouble for asking something like that. So, because of he got whacked in the face last time. So I wonder if he's legitimately trying to help her or if he's trying to start trouble that will lead to him getting killed at this point already.
I think he was genuinely trying to help her. The reason I think this is because I didn't catch this the first time around, but I think one of the big instigators for him getting dragged in to talk to General Hux is that he doesn't give the map over to Ezekiel. So he's got the map on him. He gets distracted with the map on him, goes over to save Annie, drops the map while that's happening, and that's how they start to figure it out. And that was my reading of it, was he genuinely got distracted because he was worried about her, and that started the process.
Okay, because the soldier comes and hits him, and Negan pushes him back, like, he's kind of asking for it there.
I think Negan is one of those guys, though, like Daryl used to be a little bit, where it's like, if you, like, nudge them slightly, they'll punch you in the face. Like, I feel like his kind of extra reactions to things are very much in keeping with his character.
Okay. Yeah. So you think at this point he's just trying to... What was he talking about last week with Ezekiel, that he would do something to spark hope and he might not make it out then?
I think he's... in his head has probably been listening to our podcast and is like, the only thing I can do that will make people like me is die. But I do think there maybe is a bit of that. I mean, Angela Kang said in the post show that she's like, she's so sweet, but she's like, Negan lives with a lot of guilt. And I'm like, does he? So I wonder if that's in his head. He's like, that's the only way he can guarantee safety for his wife and kid, is if he does that kind of sacrifice thing. But
that he lives with a lot of guilt. He does seem to feel guilty a lot, at least somewhat. But then they write into a script, I became the kind of monster the world needed. And if I had it to do all over again, I would have killed you all. Like, he has had a chance to express remorse and defended himself, you know? So anyway. Just thought I'd throw that out there. But I get, I'm just a little confused because it seemed like he had decided last week to be a martyr, but here I wasn't clear if he had already had that in mind or not. But you're right. It does seem like he might ask for help with his wife because he cares about his wife, and then get into a shoving match with the soldier just because he's kind of like Daryl was with him, you know, like, doesn't want to take any shit. So it was unclear. And then, Ezekiel's in the cafeteria trying to spread hope with this guy, Tyler Davis, who was the one that had Max at knife point at that fancy cocktail party early on in the season. And I think this is all mostly just part of the fake storyline to get us to think Negan will turn on Ezekiel, because they're establishing that Ezekiel is the person that the warden is looking for. So they're showing him doing the things that the warden wants stopped. So then Negan keeps mouthing off and causing trouble, and they eventually take him to the warden's office. And while he's sitting there, the warden tells Officer 97 that his transfer to see his sick brother has been denied because you went over my head. So your duty's extended 6 months and your brother's going to die and you're never going to see him.
So I fully thought that was a setup.
Yeah,
I was like, why would they say that so obviously in front of someone who you think is planning a rebellion? I was like,
it's clumsy.
So they're setting it up to see if Negan will go in. And I was like, oh no, it's just clumsy writing.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I thought it was clumsy writing no matter what, but that maybe Negan was going to take advantage of that. And he kind of did. At the end, he said to the guy, I know you have a family, but really, I think more it was to make it more believable that these soldiers would turn on them, to show us that they're discontented. But this warden is the worst at his job, because
that's terrible.
First off, if you want your soldier, you really need loyalty from your soldiers. So don't be a dick like that.
Don't be a massive dickhead. No one likes that.
That's not going to help your case. Clearly,
absolutely
right?
Not.
They turned on him. So what the fuck? Why would you do that? And then, so the warden has the map. He knows someone's keeping track of the guards' numbers and where they are at all times. He thought it was Negan, but he sees Negan's concern about his wife, and he's like, now that I see you have other priorities, a real leader separates. They cleave themselves off from everyone else, because the things that real leaders do, most people just don't have the stomach for it. but the ones that do, they're the real threats. So he was talking about how Negan used to be. I think that was on purpose, right? Negan cut himself off. He didn't, he did things other people don't have the stomach for. So then he wants Negan to figure out who's planning the coup. And later Negan tells him, it's me, I planned the coup. We don't see that, but
we're left to assume that he's maybe telling Ezekiel.
Yeah. But this, I'm thinking, okay, if you are planning to give yourself up, why didn't you do it now? I think it's just for the drama of the story.
Oh, 100%.
Or maybe just say goodbye to Annie. I don't know. But then he's with Annie, and I actually really like this scene because when he says, I've known men like the warden, hell, I used to be him. And Annie said, in that case, it's no wonder everyone hated you. And they both just started laughing. That felt like a real moment between that those two characters might have, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It made me think a little less of Annie. I have to say,
but she's with him, so
yeah, it's, I mean, that's the thing, she loves him so absolutely. And Annie was in the bed that I think Negan was in when his life has just been spared by Rick. I think that's
oh, really? I forget that they're even in Alexandria because it's
it looks so different, right? But I think that is the bed that he's in when Michonne and Rick are like, you're gonna get locked up for a really long time. I don't believe that her baby was kicking for a moment because she doesn't even have a bump.
I know, huh?
Right. I was like, I just looked it up because I'm no obstetrician, but apparently it should start around 16 weeks of pregnancy. And going on the timeline, I don't think that's possible. But anyway, that's a small nitpick. I think that's, you know,
also sloppy. Whatever. Writing. I don't think she was lying. I think it's, So then
she later, was lying.
so then we'll just make him feel better or whatever. Yeah. But then, he tells her, you know, she's like, we're going to get out of here. And he goes, I know we are. I'm working on it. And he says, I'll handle him. And watching second time, I couldn't tell. It doesn't seem like he's thinking in the back of his head, this is my goodbye to you. It seems like he's really trying to reassure her. So if you're to take that at face value, then he still hasn't planned what he's about to do. Then he's on the tracks with Ezekiel, but he won't tell Ezekiel what the warden was questioning him about. I'm like, why not? Tell him what he said. Tell him your plan.
Yeah.
You know, why it's just for the drama of the story. That's it. So we will think that they just did a lot of contortionism here to make us think that Ezekiel or that he was going to turn Ezekiel in. Mm-hmm. So, and then Ezekiel brings up Benjamin, Henry's brother. And this seemed really forced because it was also just to make us think Negan would turn on Ezekiel, but they already confronted each other last week and begrudgingly agreed to work together. So why then is Ezekiel suddenly, oh, you know what? I forgot. You killed that kid. I'm still mad at you.
I also just loved, he's like, this is about Benjamin. And Negan's face is like, who, Benjamin? Who?
Like, and so are we all. Oh, yeah.
Who that? Kid, oh, yeah, that guy. Oh, okay. Yes.
So I'm not going to talk about, you know, the end. That's too much for one point with Negan. But I guess my whole point is it just, even on second watch, it wasn't exactly clear for me what Negan had in mind throughout all of this, because I think they were just trying to make a story where we thought he was going to turn Ezekiel in, and then that made what was actually happening really confusing to me.
Yeah. And it's interesting that the thing that Ezekiel said that like really hurt his feelings is, truth is, if this works out, you damn sure don't deserve to be a father. And I think that really bothered Negan a lot. Yeah.
Well, they were just trying to find that line, kind of like in, was it Empire Strikes Back, where they needed a line for Darth Vader to say to Luke. And so then he threatened, or maybe it was Return of the Jedi, threatened Leia, and that brought out his anger. It's like, what can we have him say that'll really piss him off, you know? So we'll think that he's going to turn him in.
I had Negan's choices as a point as well. I thought they did a bit of sneaky editing at the start with Judith's voiceover and the Negan flashbacks, because they started with the lineup and then showed us like Negan with Lucille, Negan doing nicer things. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay, we're suckers, whatever. And the voiceover says, you know, my father believed, you know, mercy over wrath. So here we are. And then we open up to obviously Negan working with the rest of the group in terms of getting a map, and I thought what Ezekiel was saying was, give me that, like, Negan, give me that. But I think what he was actually saying was Negan the map, like, reminding him to hand it back. And that led up to him getting a kicking from the guides again. Were there train tracks that close to Alexandria? I really don't remember that. I need to go back and look at a map, because you see Carol and Daryl watching Negan getting beaten up through their binoculars. Mm. And I'm like,
well,
is that close by?
There's no trains until now. So if there were, I guess you could say, oh yeah, there were, but we just never saw them because there were no trains.
Yeah, just wasn't relevant. So that was kind of how it was set up. It made me laugh to think that the reason they figured out that there was going to be a, like, riot or people in uprising was because they found that map. Because I'm not joking, these guys are not being subtle with planning this rebellion. Like, I was watching it, I was like, you're being so obvious, you're talking to each other so obviously. The canteen scene where they try and kind of get Tyler on side was a nice bit of work, I think, that paid off towards the end when Tyler does decide to come in and stand with them. I sort of laughed a bit when they were like, this ain't living, man. And I was sort of looking at their food trays like, do you know what? We've seen worse food in the apocalypse. Like, it seems like they're actually getting 3 meals a day and stuff. It's probably not as bad as when they nearly ate dog food.
You know, yeah, we were starving before, so.
Yeah, it was like, well, I mean, it looks like you've got mashed potatoes. Like, so, like,
we met some cannibals. And,
yeah, I know. It was once so bad, Carl tried to eat some dog food, and everyone's like, this is terrible. This canteen lunch is disgusting. And I'm like,
it's not even warm.
It's not even warm. I'm like, okay. Tyler does say people who shouldn't die end up dead, which seems to indicate that maybe there's a habit of, you know, one person is picked out or something like that.
Yeah, he said we've tried before and it didn't work, so clearly they've tried and someone's been killed.
And it really, really stuck. It really, really stuck out to me when Negan is dragged to the front of the group, the blood marks on the wall behind him, like it's been a shooting range for people. Oh, horrible. Hot rip ball to think about that kind of execution. Yeah. The guy that's kind of the foil to Negan, General Hux, he's all right. I don't quite buy that he's, I don't know, he looks, for one thing, I really liked his knitted jumper, and I was just like, he looked like a knitwear model from like a men's L.L. Bean catalogue or something. You don't look like a common trooper. But it was interesting to see him and Negan kind of play off each other. He didn't have a huge amount of depth to him, and I found the this pregnant wife of yours thing a little bit tiresome.
I like the character, the way the guy played it and the look, because it's different than you would expect. And I thought his demeanor and his tone were good. I think personally, I thought the actor did a great job, but he's just really thinly written.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? He was there to serve a really obvious narrative function and of he's like a bad guy.
Bad guy who's very, very bad at his job.
Yeah, bad, incompetent guy.
Yes.
Yes, and then that takes us all the way up to kind of the conflict with Ezekiel and Negan, and I pretty much agree with kind of what you said. I think Ezekiel was coming in hot this week. Like, he was really still very angry. I think he's probably angry at himself for working with Negan, but he was very... You wouldn't have known they'd already had a conflict last week. Like, it was, like you say, it was like he went off and he's like, another thing I'm angry about.
It's like you have a fight with your partner and then you think it's over and the next day it's not. What happened?
I've just remembered that thing you did that really pissed me off. And they're like, oh, boy. And then that smash cut to the general saying, what have you got for me, was obviously very manipulative. But I mean, I'm pretty much of a mind with what you said there. I think the final scene is probably one of our points on its own, so I'll kind of leave it there for now. But yeah, I had some Negan thoughts. He's trying. I'll give him points for effort.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, if I think I know what happened, he's actually going to sacrifice his life to try to save everybody else. So he's, you know, shown that he saved Judith back in season 9, I think, or maybe 10. And he's clearly not the way he was before when we first met him. He's trying to help.
Also, like, Negan doesn't know he has a spinoff, so he's going into that thinking he's actually going to die.
Yeah,
and I have to give him props for that. Yeah. And again,
it's a big
deal. I can see why JDM is like, that's really shit that they kind of undercut my moment of being like, it's fine, it's probably going to be alive.
I'd have thought maybe he was about to die, if not for the spinoff, for sure.
Oh, interesting parallel, though. Oh, no, we're probably going to talk about this later. Where the general says, we won't have any martyrs here. I'm sure Negan says that in the lineup in the comics. And that's the reason he doesn't kill Rick, is because he doesn't want a martyr figure.
Cool.
Does he say it in the show?
I don't remember, but...
No.
I wish I'd
gone back and checked, but it was an interesting parallel. Because it is a point, and Negan, he was right to say that, so...
Yeah, let's get into that whole part, Negan's sacrifice. So, their soldiers grab Ezekiel... And it's like, oh, shit, Negan turned him in. But no, they're grabbing everyone to witness the killing of Negan. I'm like, well, Negan wants to martyr himself to help inspire hope. And they're bringing everyone out to watch it to squash hope. So who's right?
Yeah.
Because, that's why I think it's such a lousy plan. Because you're risking... about the biggest thing you can, your own life, for something that may or may not work. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, their situation is pretty bad. Anyway, so the warden wants to make an example of him, and it was great because he's down on his knees, just like what he made other people. Mm-hmm. It's a deliberate echo of that scene.
Even and, like the lighting, having it lit and everyone's, it was a good parallel.
Great. And Annie runs towards him for a second and he goes, hey, it's okay. And I'm like, well, it's not okay.
No.
Like, I don't know what you mean by okay, but.
It's not at all. Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, and I'm like, another reason why this is not a great plan on Negan's part is, what if they had said, oh, you're the leader? Okay, well, we're going to kill you and your wife. And that's exactly what happened. Warden says, ready, aim, psych.
Yeah.
There are no martyrs here. Then grabs Annie. I'm like, isn't that two martyrs now? Like, I'm worried that killing this guy that no one likes will spark a rebellion. So let's kill his pregnant wife too. That'll help.
That was such dumb reasoning. I was like, you know what will make them fear you more? Killing the pregnant lady. Like,
Yeah, I mean, if he's afraid of martyrs, that's not a good plan.
Bad call.
Yeah.
Bad, bad call.
But I did think maybe she would die, because this is what you and me and other listeners have been predicting, that Annie would die and that would spark something in Negan. Like, a realization or something like that of what he's done to others. I did like that when they brought her out, that he got frantic. This wasn't our deal. Like, JDM was great. It's just
he growls when he's that angry. It's kind of cool. He's like, well, no.
Then he started to get scared. He's like begging, please, please. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially now that I know no one died, it's, I got to admit, it's kind of satisfying to see him put in the same kind of situation he used to put other people in.
Well, in his head, he must have been like, oh, this is it. This is my fucking karmic retribution. And it wouldn't have been unfitting in that sense. But no, I'm glad it wasn't that for Annie's sake. But yeah,
but maybe just that will change his perspective on the whole thing. I hope so.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Have you been there?
I think it
might. Oh, man. Maggie, the most fucked up thing happened the other day. Yeah. Now I can say I know exactly how you feel. Maggie's like, really?
Really. And by the way, like, I don't think anyone there, except for
was in
Negan,
the lineup,
was also there the night of the lineup. But it would have been great to see if Maggie was there somewhere and what her reaction would have been.
I was a little, I was bummed that didn't happen, because I think what they were saying
Maggie's
is
like, Maggie, get him!
Maggie's like stuck in the house with Carol, rescuing Herschel. And I was a bit like, oh, it would be really interesting if Maggie had been there. I would want to see what she would do in that situation.
Absolutely.
But maybe that's too complicated. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe so. Adds a little other piece to it. Now, Ezekiel stepped out, as Rima said, probably for Annie, not for Negan. So by bringing Annie over, the warden really fucked himself. If he hadn't done that, maybe his would have been fine. They would have killed Negan and everybody would have been like, oh, we better not do what he did. Mm-hmm. But then the word says, everybody else steps forward and he's all, oh, I admire you for your bravery. Shoot them all. And I was like, wait a minute. Just a minute ago, he was like, all right, I'm going to give everyone else the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Is that really what this like menacing leader would say? And I'm like, well, he's probably just saying that because he doesn't want to kill all his workers. He's got to have workers. But then this happens and he's like, okay, kill them all.
just kill them all.
Like, I don't know.
Fine.
And then the warden grabs Kelly, or the soldier turns on him, of course, and everybody turns on him. And the warden grabs Kelly, but Daryl knifes him. And why didn't I have the Rosita thing in here? Oh, well. It seemed silly to me that he wouldn't answer Rosita's question. Like, does he care that much? He's going to die.
Yeah, that confused me. I was a bit like, I mean, you're about Rosita to get your face literally eaten off. Don't be a dick. I think Kelly, I was worried for Kelly for a minute there. I was like, oh, this is going really quick. Oh, shit, Kelly. No, not Kelly. Like,
I thought you meant Kelly really was... Burgess, who's a big Negan fan, one of our listeners. Oh.
yeah, that's definitely it. I was worried Kelly. Show yes. Kelly. It was nice that Daryl and Connie were just around the corner, having come out of the shit tunnel, to kind of rescue that. But yeah, not having Maggie and Carol there was an interesting choice, I reckon.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that this whole thing was happening in Alexandria. It's like a flip side of what happened with Negan before. And Annie didn't die, but yeah, maybe this experience is enough to get Negan to understand that I became the monster this world needed is kind of bullshit.
Yeah, it's not a good argument. I liked looking at who came there to stand in front, and it was our core gang. Nabila, what are you doing, you sweet, sweet angel of a lady? Get away from the guns. You need to live. Yeah, you need to look after kiddos. Your cute kiddos.
We didn't even know she was there, right?
No, Nabila and Magna were a surprise.
She and Princess just kind of popped up.
Mm-hmm, and Princess as well. Nabila, Princess, and Magna must have been on different,
buses or whatever.
Yeah, transports. But I was like, not Nabila. See, if Nabila got shot while someone was trying to shoot Negan, I would fly to Angela Kang's house and be like, what the actual fuck, lady? You cannot kill Nabila. It's not right. She is the cutest button of a lady. And if you hurt her in any way, I'm not going to be happy, particularly not if it's because of Negan, okay? And I'm sure Angela Kang would be really nice about it, but that's what I would do.
She'd be like, come in for tea.
Oh, she's like, oh, that's so sweet. Come in. We'll talk about what Negan's really thinking. And I'll be like, okay. I did think Alexandria was looking... There was a couple of things I thought about how it looked in that scene, but the main one was our group were really, really struggling to get, like, the windmill working again and all the crops kind of replanted, and it seems like the Commonwealth have done it in about 2 weeks. So if and when they do get Alexandria back, like, they've saved them quite a lot of labor, so that's great. They really leaned into the Zed chewing that guy's face off, and it was glorious. Yeah. So visceral.
It was just like what Aaron did fairly recently with that whisper. He used a walker to get information from the guy, made the walker bite the guy. I think it bit his arm so they could chop it off. But even so, even though it was a bit of a repeat, it was pretty fun to watch.
I did enjoy that Negan's response after all that character growth was to then go and try and bash the general's head in with a rock. I was like, no, some things never change. did he say, old habits die hard. Did the general say to Rosita, you will lose everything? Was that his line? Right. Okay. I thought I'd heard that. Some lines I kept missing in this episode.
Yeah. That moment, it just, I don't know. Because the character, I feel like, is so thinly written. I'm like, why are you so invested in this that you have no fear right now? Why? You're about to die.
Like, just be decent, like, whatever. He clearly didn't hear Father Gabriel's sermon on, like, how to die and not be a dick. So.
Like, your complaint about Annie last week being thinly written, basically same thing, you know, just there as a tool for other characters to bounce off of, is even more true with this guy, I would say, or at least the same, because they got to finish it up. We got two more episodes.
Yeah, they got to do all this. All
time
this
for depth.
Two weeks. Mm-hmm. Whose turn is it?
I don't know. Why don't you go?
All right.
I think it's your turn.
I feel like I don't have loads of big points today. I have like lots of little observations. Eugene's address to the court was very good. And I really liked the way that he spoke about his time with the Whispers, which is something that I am very culpable of forgetting, that he actually genuinely went all in on being a savior. He had said Whispers, I meant saviors, that he went all in on being a savior. It wasn't, you know, a long game or anything. He just enjoyed it and was happy with the security it gave him. And I think that level of reflection was really nice to hear. I thought it was very funny that he said he fell in with a posse, because I find the word posse really, really amusing. So I like the idea of the saviors as like a posse, which made me think of like, I don't know, a gang of tough kids at school who like smoke and like ride bikes and stuff. But as you said earlier, this, he just speaks so plainly about they need to find courage to do what's right, because that's something he can relate to. And this image of him not being the one swinging the bat, but nonetheless having blood on his hands. And I think that kind of character growth is just very nice to see. And it's heartbreaking, because earlier in the episode, before he gives that address, he's pretty certain that he might get off. You know, he says, your nerves mystify me, Yumiko, because he can hear that the crowd is with him. But Yumiko realizes that even if the crowd are with him, the judge won't be. And just that thought of like waiting for your execution, waiting for that verdict to fall, it's just very heavy. And although it's not the storyline that maybe has the most action in it, I am actually enjoying it. I like the mix of characters that are involved, and I think Josh McDermott is doing some of his best work in these scenes, particularly that monologue.
Yeah, pretty sure that was my favorite storyline of this episode, just because it felt the most effective and I had the least issues with it.
It's the immovable thing that in order for this avalanche to come, that storyline has to be effective, because that's coming from right at the heart of the Commonwealth.
And also it's like all the other stuff going on, like the communities have all been taken over. So there is no choice for our heroes but to rebel against the Commonwealth, you know, and that hinges on what happens in that storyline with Mercer and Eugene and everybody.
Yeah, because part of me was thinking like, okay, so say Alexandria has turned and is now belongs to the group again. What after that? Like, what does that mean for Oceanside? What does it mean for other areas? You know, how do they go from there? What do they need? And it is for the key Commonwealth to also fall in a good way. So,
Oh, yeah. I guess you're right. Yeah, Alexandria now is safe again. It's a safe zone again, I guess, right? I wonder if the Commonwealth soldiers will be invited to stay there, or if they'll deal with whose side they're on now. Are they ready to go back and fight against the others, or what?
Or will those soldiers help coordinate how to get back into the city and what to do, you know? Because I'm sure there'll be some soldiers who won't want to, but...
Yeah.
I think most of them probably will after the you know, attempted shooting of a pregnant lady. I feel like, So yeah, Eugene's speech, I really enjoyed it. And that was something that stood out to me from this episode.
Okay, I'm going to talk about... which one should I talk about? I'm more interested to talk about Aaron's crew. So first, Lydia knifes Azed, and Elijah says, why'd you run at it? Could have been a climber. So I guess at least Elijah has dubbed these variant zombies climbers.
I like that. I was like, oh, a climber, eh?
And then Luke shows up.
Yay!
Does it bother you that Jules was also there, or?
Fine, whatever. She bugged me less this time. I was like, okay. I know that if we were in the zombie apocalypse, you'd take care of Jules and I would take care of Luke. And that's why we're friends.
We help each other out.
Yeah, it's fine.
I was actually spoiled that Luke was in it, so that was a little bit of a bummer.
I know. I had to leave a couple of groups because I was getting spoiled. Yeah. But it was a nice spoiler, but I was also like, oh, damn it. Yeah.
I just saw somebody say, Luke. But
you heard me scream. Ah!
I didn't know in what capacity, but I was glad he showed up early in the episode. Mm-hmm. They're all dirty. They're so glad to see their friends. I mean, he's such a great actor, especially with this character where he's just emotive and sensitive and everything.
I loved how he lit up when he said, my gang. My crew.
I was my crew, oh, Magna. Yeah, they're going back to Alexandria. It's great.
Yeah.
Little do they know. I mean, they should have maybe figured, wait a minute, what happened at Oceanside? And they're going,
they're like, so Commonwealth bad, Oceanside bad, Alexandria probably fine.
It's probably like, fine. Okay, no. Good. But then, yeah, we know now because, of course, I mean, we finally find out what happened at Oceanside. They took it over just like the other two. And Pamela's deal was bullshit. And then they hear that the soldiers approaching at the end and there's nowhere to hide. So they spread guts on themselves and hide in this hoard. And I thought that was a cool scene too, with all the mist and moonlit night. And looking at Lydia in there, like thinking, okay, does she find this the easiest because she's lived among the Zeds so much? Or is it even harder for her because it's like PTSD from
It must be quite traumatic. So what were they trying to do? Because Peter was like, are they looking for them in the crowd? And I don't think they were looking for them in the crowd. But I wondered, is that how they heard the Zeds? They kind of confuse them and overwhelm them and try and kind of break up the herd that way. I was a bit unclear about why the lights were being shone.
Yeah.
I thought it was about disorientation, maybe.
Well, they are out tracking these guys. That's what Luke said. They're tracking us. And so to me, that meant they tracked them here and they are looking for them. Somebody in the instant reaction said, no, they were trying to confuse the zombies or something. And I'm like, I don't think so. Why would they hurt or confuse zombies? They don't care about the zombies. I think they were looking for them. But then if that's true, it does make it a little ridiculous because they're clearly visible.
Yeah, no, I was like, it'll be the ones that are humans and going, oh, the light. Yeah. Like, they're not zombies. Like, ow, my eyes. Yeah, they're probably not as Ed.
So that was a little silly. It's one of those things where they try to make the camera work so you don't notice. But if you imagine that you were there just standing off to the side, you'd see these lights shining, these people's faces walking amongst the zombies.
You're like, oh, look, there's one. It was a little unclear.
But then I don't know who, maybe Lydia drops a knife and one of the Zeds picks it up and goes, you dropped their knife. And hands it back to her.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Hi, Lydia.
Love you. Miss
we
you.
Miss you.
No, so I guess that's one of those climber variants, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm unclear as to how the variants will manifest, but it seems like using tools, basic tools, and then climbing and being able a bit
opening
more mobile.
Opening doors, yeah.
Yeah.
And tap dancing and reciting poetry, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. it was lovely, lovely to see Luke and Jules again. And we now have an answer to what's happened at Oceanside. Still unclear about when Lance had the time to go there and flip a coin and then dash back to chase down Maggie. But whatever, it gave us a little bit more Lance on screen, so...
Yeah, I wonder what the coin flip was for. Should we take this place over or kill everyone, or...
I don't know. I assumed it was live or die. Assumed it was live or die.
So what else?
What else do I have on my list? It was very cool to be back in Alexandria. I wish I had a better sense of whose house was whose. I think Maggie and Carol are in Rick and Michonne's house. And I think they popped up out of the sewer near where Negan was being held in earlier seasons. And I think we may have seen the inside of Deanna's house with the general, but I'm not 100% clear on that. They were definitely having lunch in the space that they used to use as kind of a town hall communal area. And I'm unclear on where the dormitories were, but it looks like Alexandria's had a bit of a makeover. But it's interesting to see how the time has passed, because I remember when we first see Alexandria, in season 5, it's like model home. You know, it's so shiny. There's so much there. Like Rick says to Carol that he and Laurie dreamed about having houses like that, like with a kitchen mm-hmm. island and all these cool appliances. And it's interesting that now we see it, it's looking more worn down. It's been destroyed a couple of times. It's quite basic in a lot of ways. So I thought that was a nice way of showing that time had passed and to see them in it again. I also really enjoyed seeing the tunnels. I remember Aaron and Maggie having a good episode where they were in the tunnels going out to look for Glenn. I think this was Dumpster Gate, actually. Yeah. So Yumi Downshift Tunnel was...
there was like a moss or a mud zombie or something, I forget.
It was something like that. And that was nice. And seeing Daryl and Connie, I'm calling them by a couple named Carol or Donnie, seeing them have a moment of admitting that they're scared down there was really, really nice. I did think it was a bit rude that Rosita was like, I want to come into the walls with you, and someone was like, we need eyes out here, and then Gabriel's there, and I'm like, oh, sorry Gabe, you only have one. But it's just a bit like, three maybe total. Make your words better. Three total. But he's a great sharpshooter. But yeah, the kind of Alexandria return to was awesome. I'm not sure if them using radios is quite risky, but I assume they're on a different frequency to everyone else. But yeah, that seemed a bit random. A bit Fear of the Walking Dead, if you ask me, but here we are.
Yeah, a couple more things about that. So it's Daryl, Maggie, Carol, Connie, Gabriel, and Rosita. Mm-hmm. And they just presume the kids are there, which... yeah. I thought they might be back at the Commonwealth. I wouldn't just assume they would bring kids to a prison camp. But okay, they're right. So, okay. So yeah, they decide, yeah, Gabriel and Rosita will stay out. Daryl, Maggie, Carol, and Connie go in. And I think the listeners were like, well, yeah, they know Alexandria, so they'll have an advantage. And that ended up being true. They use these sewers. I also liked the visuals of that with their flashlights moving here and there, and the overgrowth in the corrugated tunnel. It reminds me of The Last of Us. They had a lot of stuff like that. So I thought it was kind of funny. Carol and Maggie sneak into one of the houses, and I wasn't paying attention to the details of Alexandria nearly as much as you. I don't know whose house is whose or anything, but they sneak into one of the houses, knock out a guard, and then they take a little time for a heart-to-heart.
Yeah, no, they're like, so we're stuck in this pantry. Should I have had children? And I'm like, my God, you've picked a moment. Like, sometimes I regret having a child. You're like, fucking hell. Like, okay, I understand, like, it's tense, but also, like, God.
We need to focus here, honey.
I know. It was nice to hear Sophia mentioned.
Yeah, and Maggie said, sometimes I think it wasn't fair to bring him into this world. Was I being selfish? And I'm like, yep, I know that feeling. I've had that thought, you know?
Well, you know, I have thoughts about this, and I don't think that everyone who has a child is selfish at all, but I think it is, it is a valid question to ask yourself sometimes, like, especially in the zombie apocalypse. You're like, did you?
Yeah.
I think Carl or and Laurie.
Or 2022, but yeah.
Yeah, or 2022, or the pandemic, or global warming, or just the general bin fire, global warming. You know, these are valid questions. It doesn't mean that they're right or wrong, you know, but I feel like Rick and Laurie have a conversation similar to that when Carl's on his deathbed about, not on his deathbed, when Carl's... they're waiting for Shane to come back with the
after
surgical
goods.
Yeah,
after he got shot by Otis.
And I think Laurie says something to the effect of, like, is it cruel to keep him going in this world? And, yeah, valid questions to ask. And yeah, I don't know.
Grim.
I don't judge them. I don't judge Maggie or Laurie or anyone. Well, I judge Laurie for managing to crash the car. Jenny. No, I don't judge you, Jenny. Don't be silly. You're my favorites. But I thought it was interesting to show that. I don't know that I would have had that conversation in a cupboard so close to lots and lots of enemies while not really keeping my voice down and crying loudly. But, you know, women be crazy.
And Carol tried to make you feel better, and that was nice.
Yeah, by mentioning her child who died through negligence. But yeah, sure, that was great. No, not negligence. It wasn't her fault.
But she said, you will always try to make the world better for him and because of him. I'm not sure if that exactly relates, but it was a nice sentiment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they hear Herschel going, help, help. And through the closed captioning, I could see the soldier said, shut up. You talk so much. Please shut up. And I'm like, that could just be a babysitter. You know? You
should be babysitting Herschel. The first time I watched it, I didn't catch that. And I was like, oh my God, they're torturing Herschel. Right. And then I watched it and I'm like, oh, clearly this common trooper is like, fuck, I hate children. I don't want to do this. He won't shut up. I just don't want to be on babysitting duty.
Yeah, Maggie and Carol burst in and Carol shoots him in the head. And I'm like, did he really deserve that? I mean, what was going on in there? You might want to check first. I guess he was tied to the chair, so I don't know.
I absolutely cracked up because it was like, gunshot, head explodes, mom! And yeah. I was just like, oh my God, Herschel.
Not at all traumatizing for that poor kid, no. I'm sure.
He's like, I'm so glad you're here, mom. And it's like, oh God.
And we don't know. I mean, if you want the kid to shut up, it doesn't seem like an interrogation. It's like,
no, exactly. Just shut up, kid. Be quiet. Come on. Please be quiet. I'll give you candy. No, like,
I don't like you.
I don't like it anymore.
And then they can't find little Coco.
Oh, Coco.
So,
or Judith. I mean, no one's looking for her out of the group that we see. But yeah, there's still Judith. Some kids missing. I know, poor Judith. Oh,
maybe Daryl. Daryl's looking for her.
Also, who's looking after Adam these days?
That Adam is Alden's. The one that Alden was looking after, right? But it was Gamma's sister's baby from the Whispers. Yeah.
So like, yeah. Mm. Where is he at? is he just by default Daryl's now? Like
he's with the CRM.
Yeah, probably. He is A, you know, A for Adam. He's a spy. Yeah. Stupid Whisperer.
Oh God. Yeah, because we had a Walking Dead trivia and one of the,
it was so fun
with the Patreon group, and one of the questions was, aside from Lydia, name another Whisperer who's with the group.
Or it was phrased really cleverly. It was like someone who originated in the Whisperer camp, right? Or something.
Yeah,
none of us got it. Well, I didn't.
Nobody got it, I don't think. And the answer was Adam. And the people who are drunk, because there's always complaining in trivia, but like the drunker ones were like, that doesn't count. He's not a Whisperer. And I'm like, yeah, he had a little baby Whisperer mask on. Didn't you see?
Yeah, didn't you see it? They do them in kids' size. Can I just say I got a higher score than Jason? So
that's true.
Just a
that's
couple true. Points. Just a couple yeah. points, but worth
let you win. Let you win. Okay.
I was drunk. Sorry. I was quite drunk.
Oh, man. It was 3 a.m. for you. I was impressed.
It was 3 a.m. for me.
I actually did better than I usually do on those things, believe it or not.
There you go.
I'm sure you believe it. Okay, let's get into notes.
I got through all mine, apart from the amazing soap opera line from Pamela of, that wasn't my son. The tape was altered. I'm like, oh nice yeah, try, Pam. Right. Even like, the judge was a bit
like, it's the zombie apocalypse, right? Like, we don't have Logic or Pro Tools
or anything past 1980 in terms of technology. Like, we're talking about a small answering machine tape.
It was
recorder.
A cassette tape, yeah.
It's like the one he uses in the room.
And that's just another, like, Mercer's there watching all that and he knows that's bullshit, so it's just thing upon thing that he's like, oh, this is not good.
She doesn't seem that sad and she keeps lying.
So my notes. Some people, I think we were talking about the voiceover last week. Some people thought it was Herschel. And I went back and listened to it and others. I wish I would have had time so I could play them for you. But the voice is the same. It's Judith. They're all Judith. And I listened to some Herschel dialogue. And his tone does sound similar, but his enunciation is different. And then just to sort of put a bow on it, I saw the official Walking Dead YouTube channel that had a video of that. And it's that, you know, voiceover. And the title was, Has Judith Grimes Lost All Hope? So it seems pretty clear it was Judith. One person said she thought it was Herschel because it was a Maggie episode. But it doesn't matter. Like, all the other voiceovers were also Judith, and Judith didn't have anything to do with most of the stuff that she was talking about. You know, it's just these are Judith doing these voiceovers. So it's pretty clearly Judith. And this time she says, the world is dark and broken, but we're not yet. And I always say, there's three things. There's iconic Walking Dead scenes. There's reminding us of a character's backstory that's going to be in the episode. This time it's Negan. And then there's a focus on a theme of the Walking Dead. This time it's choosing mercy over wrath. So she says the world is dark and broken, but we're not yet. And then we see Negan at his lineup whistling with his bat. We stare into the face of death every day. Negan points his bat at Glenn, Daryl, Abraham, and Rosita. And then we see Maggie after Negan killed Glenn, upset. And then Negan laughing about it. And she says, until one day that face is your own. And then that's when we start seeing like Negan crying next to, I think, Lucille, his, as a zombie. And then we see her, him talking to Judith when she was littler. And then she goes, how do you come back from that? And then we see him hugging his wife, Lucille. And then she says, my dad...
by going into the past.
My dad wanted mercy to prevail over wrath. And then Negan looking over some flames. If we lose that, we lose everything. So I like that theme of The Walking Dead, of being more merciful versus wrathful. It's kind of ironic that Rick's the one to say that, given that he hasn't always lived what he preaches there. So, a couple other notes. I kind of wonder why Elijah isn't wearing his Reaper mask anymore, but I also wonder why he was ever wearing that. So I don't know.
Yeah, that was just a bit of like, and then like, oh, it's just a normal person under there. Cool.
Yeah. But I also like, that's, I think it was the same kind of mask that his mortal enemies were wearing. So, and we never got
an explanation
why he was wearing it. And then, yeah, I guess we already mentioned that Princess just kind of popped up, and Nabila and Magna, you said. So I guess they came on other buses. All right. Anything else?
No, that's me.
All right. We'll take a little break. There is more to come. Stay with us.
Threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people it kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
Okay, Angela Kang was interviewed by Entertainment Weekly. They say, okay, the last line from Mercer, time to FS up. Fuck shit up. Tell us about deciding to end on that very emphatic note. As you said, she says, so that was not originally the line, and I don't even think that was originally the last beat of the script, but sometimes you're just in editing and you're moving things around, and it just felt like that was such a cool, dramatic moment. And that was a free take that Michael did for fun, and nobody thought we'd use it, but my editor had to put it in the cut that he and the director, Ross Troach, did, and I was like, we should just check the scripted takes just in case. And by far, that was the coolest, best take. And we're like, let's just use it. Why not?
Mm.
Good move, right?
Excellent. Very good move. Very much appreciate.
Mm-hmm. To use that take and to have it be the last moment, that's good editing right there.
Perfect.
They say, what was the original ending? Mercer was having ice cream with Max. No, I'm just kidding. Mercer's original last line was, time to take this place. It was much more cut and dry. Well, the new line really does cement the turn and feels almost like an official start of the end game here with only two episodes left. So what is it exactly that Negan says to the warden that leads him to being put on the firing line? Does he just go in there and say it's all him spearheading this rebellion so people like Annie and Ezekiel are left alone? Is that essentially how the conversation went? She says, yeah, I think it was essentially, it's me. And I think he was thinking, I've given myself up. It's only going to be me that's taken out or punished or whatever. And at that point, he feels like maybe that's the potential sacrifice that has to be made so that everybody else survives. And he feels at that point, well, maybe that's fair. Maybe my time's up. I've already gotten to have a run longer than maybe I deserved.
Sorry.
So, yeah, I believe all that. I don't think it was a smart move because what if it didn't do anything? But
yeah, the execution of it wasn't fantastic, but yeah.
But I do believe that he's just feeling like, all right, I did a bad things.
My time's up.
Yeah. They go, Luke says the Commonwealth took over Oceanside. So what happened to Rachel and everyone there? She says, we left that kind of ambiguous, but we know that Commonwealth took over. I think a lot of people died, but you never know because some people might have escaped. We know that Oceanside is very, very tough, but they were just told to run off. So even the story for Luke is incomplete. He just knows that probably a lot of people didn't make it at Oceanside. Maybe they were all killed. He doesn't know. Or maybe they fought back and defeated some people. Speaking of mysteries, where's Coco? She says, well, we'll find out, won't we? And they say, will we? And she says, we will.
She's so sweet. Yeah, that's we will. Okay.
We will. I could totally hear her saying that. And then I only have two items this week. The second one is that HBO announced that The Last of Us premieres on January
15th, 2023. Ooh, that's exciting.
Pretty quick, yeah. I want to keep mentioning this just so you guys know, but as soon as The Walking Dead ends, then this podcast is going to transform into the Cast of Us, a Last of Us and Walking Dead cast. So you'll see the podcast art and title change in your feed. It might even move to a different spot because if you have your podcast in alphabetical order or whatever, so be ready for that. We will still be covering The Walking Dead spinoffs, and we're making plans for Dead City already, basically for other people to cover that, but it will be on Amazing. This podcast.
Who's in the firing line?
Well, I think Ben is going to be the main host, and he will either rotate in guest co-hosts or we'll find a regular one for him. But I figure if you and or me want to guest sometime, then we can both make appearances, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'll definitely watch it. Yeah, me too. I just don't know if I can deal with Negan that much. It's probably not fair. It's like fear, isn't it? It's not fair for listeners if all I'm going to do is
complain about Negan. That's how I feel about myself. Yeah. Like, I would consider just going ahead and covering it, but I just think it would be better for the listeners to not have to listen to me talk about Negan all the time. So I'll probably just do one of them or something. Maybe you could do one if you want.
That sounds good. Yeah.
All right, that is our show, episode 489. Thanks for listening, everybody. Two more.
This is our last remote recording.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're gonna be in person next time. That'll be really fun.
Yeah, I'll be in the air this time next week. So I guess we might be late next week, huh? Because I won't arrive until the Tuesday.
That's right. I think we're podcasting on. I thought we were podcasting.
Yeah, we're podcasting on the Tuesday. I'm arriving on Monday night. That's
and so right. It'll be out a day or two later next week. So,
and we'll be extra drunk.
It's going to be cool because Karen and I used to podcast in person every single time. So it'll be fun.
I always thought you did. I was really surprised that
she moved farther
away.
There
was a remote setup. Yeah, she did.
So if you want to write in or leave us a message for, you know, this week's episode, next week's, whatever you want. You can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows, including Handmaid's Tale, I think is going strong at the moment.
Yeah, it's actually the season finale is this week.
Oh, no way. Oh, wow. This is a big week for you then. Yeah.
I have six podcasts this week.
Six? What have you got? You've got this, Dead to Me. Handmaid's Tale.
But we're doing feedback episodes for this show and Handmaid's Tale 2. Then I have one other thing I can't remember right now.
Amazing. Oh, well, Godspeed. Good luck.
And speaking of that, next episode of this podcast will be our feedback-focused episode for Faith, you know, season 11, episode 22, or whatever else you guys want to write in about.
Yes. We are really enjoying those.
Yeah, so we really are. And we've gotten some pretty good feedback from you guys on it too. So I'm glad it's working out.
It's been great.
This episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Christopher Mehta, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCavassi. So thank you, Christopher. As I mentioned, we had a really fun trivia night this week where Lucy beat me and it was great.
Yes.
And
best day of my life.
We usually do those once a month, maybe every couple of months, but they're pretty great. There's all kinds of stuff going on over there.
Nathan is an amazing quizmaster, I have to say. it takes a lot to stump a group of hardcore nerds, and he did it. So
he was
major
really good.
Props.
And he dealt with all our drunken bullshit, so that was cool too.
He did indeed. He did.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening. Don't get bit, Christy Coppage. Yeah.